nasal swabs, isolation, and an endless supply of granola bars. Such is life inside the NBA's bubble in Orlando.
We can't leave. You cannot leave your room. The testing is done here at your room.
That is Joe Vardon. He covers the NBA for The Athletic, and he is reporting from inside the Orlando bubble, and he joins us to tell of his experiences so far. I'm Seth Davis from The Athletic, and this is The Comeback, COVID-19 and the Return of Sports. We'll get to Joe Vardon in a moment, but first, let's update you on what's happening around the world of sports. The NFL has revealed one weapon it hopes will stop the spread of the virus, a face shield. The piece of plastic will connect to the lower part of the player's face masks with the purpose of hopefully blocking droplets carried in the breath of those players. The face mask is designed by Oakley. Right now, it's not mandatory for players to wear them, but we'll see how that develops. In baseball, mass delays in test results are prompting several teams to seek help outside of Major League Baseball's primary testing facility in Utah. That, according to a report from Ken Rosenthal and Zach Buchanan of The Athletic. The Arizona Diamondbacks have sent players to local testing sites in Phoenix to get quicker results, and Major League Baseball is acknowledging other unidentified teams have taken similar steps. MLB has partnered with a second lab in New Jersey in order to expedite the testing. In college sports, the Patriot League is canceling its fall sports season due to the coronavirus pandemic. ESPN reports the league is considering playing football this upcoming spring if conditions improve. Now, Army and Navy are part of the Patriot League in all sports, but not for football. Neither military academy has made a decision yet on what their football seasons will look like. Now to the NBA, where 22 teams are currently practicing in ballrooms and inside of a convention center in Orlando, where they are preparing for the final 8 games of the regular season and then the playoffs. A select group of media members have been allowed to penetrate the Disney bubble. Joe Vardon is among them. He covers the NBA for The Athletic, and he joins the show today to discuss how things are going so far. Joe, thanks for being on the show. Although, let's be honest, I don't think you really have much anything else to do right now. You're locked in this room. And as we were getting ready to record, you got some good news. Tell us not only the news, but how the mechanics of it all went down.
Okay, so first of all, we need to set a couple of things straight. I'm thrilled to be on your podcast. It's very good. And it was a smart idea to do this whole idea of the comeback. And so, of course, I would do it. But yes, I am locked in a room, but I'm actually like crazy busy. It's insane. Between these Zoom calls for the teams with their practices every day, the interest in I guess me or my experience because I am in the bubble. So I've got all that kind of stuff. There's various athletic business to tend to. And then I have this kind of audacious goal of trying to write every day. And I think for the most part, I'm going to be writing at night and then it'll be edited in the morning and it'll come out in the mornings. But so I've already done the Milwaukee Bucks call. And then I did an interview about testing with the head of the lab, which was good. But yes, I just had my own experience. We're all gathering here on our Zoom call to figure this out and record. And just as Seth hopped on, I got a nice little ding in my email box from the lab, BioReference Laboratories, and this is how it works. If they email you, you're negative. If they call you, you have a problem. And my first test was done at about 10 o'clock last night. You know, I stayed up late writing and then like talking to friends, kind of catching up. And so I think I went to bed at about 1:30. And 3:30, the hotel phone rings and I have no idea where I am. Is there a bomb going off? Is there a fire alarm? I'm, you know, just like, what the hell is happening here? And of course, by the time I figured out that it was the phone ringing, I had missed the call and it's 3:30 in the morning. And immediately the message light goes on and it takes me a minute to think this through. And I'm like, oh my God, I tested positive. Who else would be calling me at 3:30 in the morning and leave a message? You know, I stumble to find a light and I look at the hotel phone, figure out how to hit the button on the messages. And I do. And they say, you have one message. I hit the button and I hit the message and it's somebody just hangs straight up. So I'm like, wait a minute. I just got tested at 10 o'clock and they told us that these results take 12 to 15 hours. So that wasn't my test. That was a prank. you bastard, whoever did it. And sure enough, you know, some 14 hours later, I just got the email that says I am indeed clear for one day.
Well, that is good news. I guess I should revise my initial wisecrack. I'm the one who has nothing to do right now. So you being inside the bubble. But again, as we were getting ready to record, big news came across. The old days, they would say the wires. Nowadays, we say social media, that Russell Westbrook has tested positive. How big is that news?
Thousands of people a day get this. It would be super big news if he was sick. So far, he is not. So far, he feels well. He is not with the Rockets. He is not here in Lake Buena Vista. And he said in his statement that he is fully intending on rejoining the team. In a couple of weeks, we're going to start playing games, and everybody gets 8 games. Let's assume that he's back here by then. He uses those 8 games to get himself back in shape. And then, you know, you figure that the Rockets would be good enough to get through a first round anyway. Just sort of in my days covering the Cavs and all their playoff runs, we would always say that was kind of the thing. Like, you would use the last couple of weeks and then the first round of the playoffs to really build that cohesion that you didn't have because of injuries or because the season gets too long and you lose focus. And that was kind of the critical time. So, you know, I mean, this can be fine. It could be fine. But if, you know, in a few days, like as we've read, he starts to have trouble breathing, or, you know, he starts to have headaches and he can't focus, and, you know, it takes away from his health, like, that's where this gets bad. But so far, I think this is fine. And hopefully he clears up and gets here maybe even this week. Who knows?
And I guess it, Joe, kind of underscores what we're up against here. We all know what's happening with the case numbers in Florida. Somehow Disney World is still open. I'm confused about that. But, I mean, do you get the sense that the NBA is truly hoping that it's created a bubble, that after this first wave of positive tests, that it can really keep this virus away from everyone, players, reporters, refs, coaches, everyone? Or is this just a reminder that it's probably not a matter of if, but when someone gets the virus, and then it's up to the league to respond?
Yeah, man, I think it's everything. I really do. I think that they built this bubble with the idea that it would be largely safe. I really do. And then I also think that they understood that until everybody got here and they could actually fit people inside the proverbial walls, and they can mandatory mask wearing and mandatory distancing and sanitization and all the really good, cool stuff that they're doing, they knew that there would be positive tests. Like, of course there are. Like, we all live at home, you know, players, coaches, GMs, media. We go to the store. I mean, we play golf. Like, like, we all try to be healthy and careful and safe, but the numbers say, like, that there are just a lot of people out there that have this. Like, the positive results on the tests are going up, not down. So it's not that we're testing more people. It's just that, you know, if you test more people but the disease isn't spreading, then the percentage of positives should go down, and it's not. It's going up. So it's just out there. So the NBA expected this. You know, it sucks more from like a PR, everybody get nervous perspective when it is a big name, for sure. And Russ is as big as they come. The only bigger name would be if LeBron or Giannis got this, and they haven't so far. So that's good. But you know, they expected this. And the thing is like, what happens later on, like when everybody has been quarantined and everybody is inside the bubble? If it starts to spread again in here, that's when you have a problem. But they think they have protocols in place for that. They think the numbers will be low. Instances will be low. We'll see if that part holds. When someone gets sick who has already been here for a couple weeks, did it spread? Did they isolate? Did they contact trace? And if that part of this works, like if somebody gets sick or a couple people get sick and then they successfully isolate them, contact trace, and prevent the spread of the virus inside the NBA bubble, that has huge ramifications for all of professional sports, to show you how to do this and how to limit it, and college sports, frankly, how to limit the spread once somebody catches it, and maybe even for the public at large.
It's an amazing experience for a reporter. For you to be there this long of a time is not easy, but take us through just your experience so far. When did you get there? What's happened since then? All the protocols you've experienced. Tell us what it's like from the bubble, beginning from the time you arrived.
Yeah. So the funny thing, guys, is in the NBA, especially if you're like, you live in a bad weather city, especially like in the North, like I do, I live in Cleveland, still do. Orlando is one of those destinations where when your team goes through on the beat that you would set it up so your family could come. And so I would always do that. And the last time I did that, was last year, kind of as I was transitioning off the Cavs and into this national role that I've had now. And so my family, like around the Cavs game, we hung out at Disney for a couple days and our hotel was the Coronado. And so that's kind of a long way of saying like, I've been here before. And actually the last time I had come to Disney World, which was in March of 2019, we stayed at the hotel where I will now be living for the next 2 months. So upon arriving here, it didn't feel special. Like it didn't really feel like, oh, I'm going into a quote bubble. Oh, this is a big deal. It was more like, oh, I was just here. I got into Disney at about 3 o'clock yesterday, 3:30, and I pulled up and they drop you off. They want to check you in and they want to hand you like your medical stuff. But the check-in is not a big deal. Like there's not like all there weren't like all wasn't all this paperwork. There wasn't all these like protocols that they run you through. It was okay. Yeah. All right. What's your name? All right. Hold on for a second. And they disappear. And then somebody comes back and they hand you this little bag that has your magic band. And that is your room key. And that is going to be how you get into venues. Like once you're out of quarantine, they tell you your room number and they say, okay, we're going to drive you over there with all your stuff and go into your room and don't come out. And we will find you with your dinner and go from there. It was kind of very melodramatic. Like there wasn't a whole lot to it. And I go into my room, which, you know, it looks the same as the room that my family stayed in. It's like, I think 314 square feet, which maybe that sounds big, maybe it doesn't, but it's compared to what we stay in typically on the road, it's just not the same. So I have queen size beds. There's a nice little desk here to work on, but otherwise, and I spent a couple hours unpacking and I unpacked literally for my 2 month stay. And then we had a Zoom call with all NBA media who is here and the league told us, oh yeah, yeah, at the end of your quarantine, we're gonna move you all to another room. Damn it. So now I gotta repack. That's devastating. You know, dinner came at like 8 something and there were all these options. Like the food is good. The food tastes good. The thing is that visually it doesn't look good because they are having it in like sanitary stuff and biodegradable stuff. So like biodegradable containers and sanitary containers and everything's wrapped in plastic that is not hot. That's different than plates with metal forks and stuff like that we're used to at restaurants. So it looks way worse than it is. At about 10 o'clock is when they did the test. I got a knock on my door. It was two guys from the lab, all in full head-to-toe PPE. They gently swabbed my nose and my throat, and they took that.
But so, Joe, just to be clear about something, are you not allowed to leave your room at all? What restrictions have they placed on you in terms of your physical movement?
Yep. We can't leave. You cannot leave your room. You can't go anywhere. The testing is done here at your room. You've got these 314 square feet. Like if you're an exerciser, I am, it's got to be done here. Like all your work is done here. All your eating is done here for 7 days. Like that's the deal. Like that's how it goes. Because the testing for the players started at home, there was already more assurance that they were probably okay. And if they weren't, like Russell Westbrook, it would be caught before they left. So there was just a little bit more quarantining that they thought they had to do over a couple of days just to make sure. I think it was like 36 hours. And now the players are practicing. Like you said, they're golfing. You know, they can walk around. Like their lives have kind of restarted. There was no assurance from any media. Like they couldn't be sure that we were safe. You know, they asked us to quarantine at home for 7 days, which I did. I mean, not kind of, I did that. I ran every day and I went on walks with my family or whatever, but otherwise, you know, like I was home, but they couldn't guarantee that. This is the hardcore, make sure that you're going to be safe when you're around our players. 7 days stuck inside. I've designed a workout of push-ups, sit-ups, burpees, and dips, and squats, and then some shadow boxing. It takes about 45 minutes. And at about noon, I got a knock on my door. It was the NBA delivering me a thermometer, a pulse oxygen machine, a sizing kit for an Oura ring, which kind of measures if they think you're heading towards COVID. They gave us the buzzer that's supposed to go off if you get within 6 feet of someone. You're supposed to attach that to your credential, which I don't have yet. And then they gave me a bunch of masks, which were cool. They all have NBA logos on them. You're supposed to log your results and symptoms every day on an app. So I got to download that and do that.
You mentioned in your story this morning for The Athletic that the league tried to set up like a DJ party. It sounds like it was about as exciting as my bar mitzvah. What is the league doing for its players to keep them entertained?
Yeah, so I think they've come up with some really cool things that I think is going to be fun. Stuff like the golf courses at Disney are awesome, actually. I hope I get to play. But you know, they've set up a bunch of tee times if the players and coaches want to take them, and so a lot of guys are doing that. There's a players' lounge that has, I think, ping pong and video games and just kind of hanging out. Like that's cool. You know, there's swimming pools and whatever. You know, and then they kind of whiffed on something. They thought like, oh, it would be fun to, you know, set up like DJs at the pools at all these parties or at these three hotels, and we'd have like a party, which, you know, on its face maybe does sound fun and does sound like something that any NBA player or anybody in general would want to do, like if you were at Vegas or whatever. The problem is that it's just the NBA players. There are no girls. There are no friends. There are no anybody else. Like, it's just them. And so, yeah, like that part of it, you know, maybe like you just, as you set up the entertainment ideas, like you didn't think like, oh yeah, you need those other aesthetics for this particular thing to be fun. And like, yeah, nobody showed up, but except for Dwight Howard, which is funny.
Well, as you probably know, there's this new Twitter feed, NBA Bubble Life. Is that from somebody, do you know, inside the bubble, or all these videos and pictures are the guys sending it? And by the way, I expect to see you shotgunning beers with JJ Redick here in the next round off that Twitter feed. Are you hip to that yet?
the reason why I'm laughing here, the NBA will not allow any such thing. At this particular bubble. In fact, I had to sign something that says I will not approach any player, any coach, any team official outside of the designated areas and times permitted by the league. So basically what that means is at the game and at practice in this specific taped off area, so long as I am 6 feet away, that is when I can talk to these people. Like, there is no one-on-ones. There is no approaching for private conversation that no one knows about. There is simply nothing of the sort. So even though we are all locked down here for 2 or 3 months at the same places, you can't do that. In China, I went to the Team USA FIBA tournament in China last year for The Athletic, and you know, for the most part, like, just kind of kept to my friend, my media friends who were there. But you know, there were a couple times where like the American team like allowed me to come to the hotel to maybe talk to a guy here or there. Certainly, like, we had didn't end up doing this, but like had discussed, you know, getting beers or maybe sipping some wine with some of the players who, you know, I'd gotten to know a little bit, and was able to do that certainly with some of the Team USA staff, like straight up allowed to do that and did it. and took him to some restaurants, and we had a couple good nights. And you just can't do that here. And that's expressly, it's in the rules. I signed the rules because that's part of the deal. And so, you know, it's a kind of a long answer to your question, but it's like it's definitely part of this experience. Like, there is no fraternizing, and there is also no like hidden or private or secret interviewing of these guys, like when you are anywhere in Disney. Can't do it.
So kind of a tangential issue, but a significant one, is LeBron James, interestingly enough, this week came out and said he is going to wear his own name on the back of his jersey. Mm-hmm. In the wake of all the going on with the protests and the George Floyd incident, the league approved 29 phrases that players can wear on the back of their jerseys. About three quarters of them, maybe a little more than three quarters, have said they will wear one of those phrases. LeBron has gone with James. How do you think that's going to go over?
You know, for your listeners who are not familiar with my career, which is probably most of them, and that's fine. I covered LeBron for the Cleveland Plain Dealer for his entire second stint in Cleveland. And like, a bunch of this kind of stuff came up. You know, there was like the Trayvon Martin thing was in Miami, but then like the Eric Garner stuff and the Ferguson, Missouri stuff. And then even in Cleveland, something happened with Tamir, with a kid named Tamir Rice, African-American kid who had a toy gun, and somebody called the police on him, like said he was scaring people. And the police just basically drove up, pulled their guns and shot him, and he died. Wasn't good. And LeBron's reaction to that stuff was different. For the things that didn't happen in Cleveland, he was pretty out front about it. And he even was one of the first, not the first, but one of the first athletes to wear an I Can't Breathe shirt before a game in protest of Eric Garner's death, and had been very outspoken about the Ferguson killing, and was very outspoken in Miami with the Trayvon Martin stuff, but actually didn't do or say anything at all about Tamir Rice. And then later, when he was when he and Carmelo and CP3 and Dwayne, they did the speech at the start of the ESPYs, when they kind of like really called out and like brought attention to this idea about police brutality, and maybe it's not good and it's happening a lot and maybe we should do something. Like, LeBron was there with them, and he participated and he made some statements. But then when the follow-up question is, was like, okay, well, what are you going to do? Okay. Are you going to march? Are you going to boycott? Are you going to sit out a game? Whatever. Are you going to take a knee? Like, as we kind of went on and like on down the line, like over the years, the national anthem, like LeBron's answer always was, well, no, I personally am not going to take a knee, even though I really support it. Or now, like, I'm not going to put a saying on the back of my shirt, even though I support it. It's fine. Like, well, what are you doing? And LeBron's thing is kind of different. Like, he has put a lot of his capital into this school. And he's got a school, if you don't know, of course you guys do, but if your listeners don't know, I don't know how that could be possible anymore. LeBron created a public school in Akron. And it, not just any old public school. Like, it is specifically for kids who are basically at risk of never graduating. And they're like, right now the school is for third and fourth graders. Next year, fifth grade will be there as well. And like every year they're going to add a grade. And his idea is like to kind of break the systemic, like sort of, you don't break racism this way, but what you do is you kind of like protect and help some of the kids that kind of fall behind because of some of the like long standing, like cyclical, like vicious poverty stuff that is the result of some of the systemic racism. And so like, that's like LeBron's plan. Like, that's what he does. He does the education thing, and now he's kind of dipping his toe into the water with voting and voting rights. Like, not like, hey, go vote for Joe Biden or whoever he happens to align with politically. It's, hey, access to the polls really matters, and I think I'm going to get involved with this. It's not, I'm going to put a slogan on the back of my jersey, which is actually, I don't mean to, like, I hope I don't sound like I'm putting that idea down. It's great. But that's not LeBron's thing. And so it actually wasn't surprising to me at all when he said that he was not going to put something different on his jersey.
Well, Joe, I'm sure this is uncomfortable for you in a lot of ways being down there, but it is definitely the reporting experience of a lifetime. And we're all sorry for the circumstances, but we're glad that you're there for us and we're glad that you're on the podcast. And most of all, glad that you tested negative and you can stay down there and stay healthy and do your job. So thanks for sharing your experiences with us. And we're certainly looking forward to following your coverage on The Athletic.
Thanks for having me, guys. I enjoyed it.
My thanks to Joe Varden for joining the show. I'm Seth Davis, and this is The Comeback presented by The Athletic. Be sure to follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you access your podcasts as we track the major issues surrounding the return of sports. Thanks for listening, everybody.